Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's now hour number two. Bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast. So if you like the idea of getting unknown people, well-known people, basically just people who can still think, despite the system of media that we currently have in New Zealand and, of course, around the world, then please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and set up an automatic payment today. There's a Kiwi Bank account there. There's ways of donating internationally as well. There's even PayPal for those of you on the credit cards. But one rule, if you are going to donate to the show, you have to have your rent paid, your utilities, you have to have your kids fed, and everything has to be sweet ass. All right? I don't want anybody being put in the line of poverty trying to support me. You know what I'm saying? And I want you to take that very, very seriously. Because if you can't take care of yourself, how are you going to take care of somebody else? That's philosophy of G. Edward Griffin. And also, those without power cannot defend freedom. Now, Mark, how old are you, mate, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 43.
You're 43? You're kind of just waking up into this stuff? How many years have you been into it?
Actually, to tell you the truth, I've only been into it for a couple of years. I had an experience, we'll say, with, well, let's just not get into that right now. This is my first interview. I'm not sure.
I reckon we should, because the reasons why we become who we are of some of the things that people most want to hear, because they get to identify with it. And many people, after listening to the wake-up stories of others, often start to have a massive awakening in themselves.
Okay, well, I see your point with that.
But well, it's your choice.
Okay, yeah, I actually don't mind. Basically, you know, brought a product of a broken home. You know, we had pretty decent family, but a couple years ago, I got myself into a spot of trouble, and that was largely brought on by an addiction problem that I had, and trusting individuals that I shouldn't trust, because those individuals set me up with the very people that I now investigate, impartially. I never really thought much of it until, we'll just say I was on vacation and I read a book, and I know it sounds cliche, but it was the Da Vinci Code series. I read the series of books and I enjoyed it, and I decided I wanted to look into it when I got home from vacation. And so I did, and, you know, I'm kind of on the fence about whether or not some of these secret societies are as evil as people portray them to be. I know that there's good people in every organization and bad people in every organization. You know, it's a personal choice whether you want to be a complete scumbag, scumbaggery, to commit scumbaggery, I guess. It's a personal choice of acting that way. And so, you know, the more I investigated this Freemasonry thing, the more I read what they write about. And that kind of actually pointed me in the direction of checking out these ancient religions. And, you know, the short time I've been doing it, I've basically been attracted to the symbolism, basically because of Freemasonry and the occult, if you will. And one thing led to another, and I stumbled across these Nazi UFO legends, you know, that I briefly discussed a while ago. And I was really hardcore into listening to everything, every bad thing everybody had to say about what's going on in the world and who's behind it. And nine times out of ten, it was a secret society, and I know that that might play a part in this, but I don't think it's the entirety of it. So that basically led me to looking into all this stuff and I guess to this show.
So this is your very first time on radio. Are you actually interested in some kind of radio career, talking about these things, you know, interviewing the Jordan Maxwells and so on and so forth of this world?
Well, yeah. See, that's the thing. You know, the more I investigate, the more I find out that, you know, it seems like there is a whole counter truth movement going on, and some of the information that comes out is either just blatantly wrong or obfuscated in some way. And, you know, without naming names, you know, I've run across a couple instances of this where I know what I read about in a book, and just because it's in a book doesn't make it any more true. But the information kind of didn't match up what the interview I was listening to at the time had said. I was watching a presentation by somebody you just mentioned, and the logo for the Grand Lodge of England came up, and that particular person had stated that that was something like New York's state logo, and I was like, huh? Where did you come up with that one? But I guess that's neither here nor there. I would like to be a little bit more organized when I speak in person about this stuff, which is why which is why it sounds like I'm unprepared right now.
Practice, mate.
I know, this is practice. It is my first time.
Yeah, so there you go.
You popped my cherry, Vinny.
I guess I'm on it.
Anyhow, you were saying?
Well, I was thinking about Freemasonry the other day, and one of my friends is a Freemason, and he firmly believes that there's only one requirement of the gig, and that's to believe that there's a higher power. Now, some people have alleged that that higher power is Satan, right? And they're just trying to keep it concealed from you. But nonetheless, whatever that higher power is that Freemasonry allegedly believes, right? It's an ancient secret society whose membership only have to believe in a higher power. And allegedly in thousands of years of knowledge accumulation within an ancient secret society, that they've still got no clear idea what that higher power is.
Right.
It sounds kind of like lunacy. I think they know what's going on, but they just don't tell their lower members what it is.
I'm pretty sure that's the case. What they write about seems a little on the strange side to me, but at the same time, it co-relates to the belief systems of what's been written down in the past by these ancient cultures. And it seems, from what I've read also, that it's based in ancient Judaism, not so much Christianity. The deeper you get into it, you see the more how it relates to Judaism. And I think that might be the basis of the belief that they're all Zionists, you know, conspiracy plotting to take over the world. But, so, you know, a higher power is a good thing to believe in.
Well, something beyond yourself, at any rate, like POW.
Right. I believe there are forces that are beyond our control that, basically you can equate it to nature, I guess. Not that, you know, I don't necessarily need to put a word to it other than say maybe the source of the cause.
Well, I don't know necessarily about source or whatever. What I know is that there's practical benefits to having a belief in a higher power. For example, POW camps in Vietnam. Guess which POWs of the US side survived? The ones who were real strong believers in God. Because when they're trapped away in that cell with no hope of rescue, they're not trapped alone in that cell. Or at least right. They believe that they're not. And this gives rise to my belief that just having faith in and of itself actually does grant you power. It's a source of strength. Strength that ordinary people just don't have if they don't have any faith. And well, I think what Tony Robbins talked about is the motivational speaker. Is that right. The problem with America right now is that it's suffering from a crisis of faith. Not faith in their government, not faith in God, but faith in themselves. And I think
I would tend to agree with you on that one.
And I think what occult teachings seem to be bringing to light, and I consider myself a de-occultist, you know, I don't think any of this stuff should be secret. Everybody should know what it is.
Right.
So that way, certain people who want to loud power over you can't really do it because it equalizes the playing field in my degree to de-occult knowledge. If everybody had the same knowledge, nobody would really be able to hold one over on each other, and it eliminates the power supply more or less for scumbaggery.
Well, right, and I would agree with you 100% on that, and that's one of the premises for this theory that I've adopted as you know, I don't want to say it's 100% true, but it's a theory that I've adopted, and it seems to work because it's backed with things that are provable. And it also brings to light, okay, what's the origin of this whole system of control? Who thought this up? You know, and why is there such a concerted effort, it seems like, to keep certain information about this particular star from us? What's that all about? I haven't been able to figure that one out, and it just seems like it goes hand in hand with all the symbology, some of the mythologies, the stories, that seem to relate to not only astrological phenomenon, but astronomical phenomenon. And basically, if this turns out to be the case, that we were genetically manipulated species, well, where did the people who did the genetic manipulation come from? Well, then this may hold the answer. The significance of which is that if people realize that we have their DNA, they're no better than us. They don't have any divine right to rule over us. And in a way, if it could help at least springboard people into that frame of mind, then we wouldn't have this... people wouldn't be able to have that type of control over us.
I think what's happening now is, let's take the climate change for a debate. It's about wealth transfer, okay? Let's say they're talking about monetary wealth transfer from the first world to the third world so that everybody will now be equally poor. What I think is happening now is that we're doing a knowledge transfer instead with this kind of alleged global awakening, and so that everybody will be equally as bright.
Right. I would like, you know, I'd like to see...
But it unfortunately means that the ones currently with huge quantities of knowledge that they don't want to be share has to be plundered, in the name of saving us from global dumbing.
Right. I'm not sure, you know, from the position I'm in at the moment, what I can do, you know, action-wise to help matters other than to keep doing this investigation sharing the information that I've come up with or sharing others' information who might have put it together a little better than I have, you know, that would explain the situation, the current situation that we're in. If I had the ultimate solution as to what to do about it, besides the transfer of knowledge, I would be more than happy to share that. But at the moment, the only thing that I can do from the position that I'm in is to pass on knowledge. You know, something hopefully of use, something that might get them into, like you said, believing in a higher power, you know, something that would,
I remember when I was, I think I was 12, I said, all that we can do in this life is to learn what we can and in time teach others to do the same.
Right. I would like to be able to do more, you know, become actively involved in contributing to the good of this world rather than just sit back and pass information around. But unfortunately, that vacation I took has left me in a position where I'm, at the time, not able to do that.
You know, it's something that happens. You believe in synchronicity, meaningful coincidence?
Very much so.
All right. Here's something I've found. I'll wake up one morning and I'll just think in my head just before I've gotten to my computer that, I've got like $250 rent to pay, $110 phone bill, and I've got food that I've got to buy for the week and everything like that with my wife. And I think I need like about $500 and I just don't have it. And I go to my computer and I check my PayPal account and somebody's donated me $500.
Nice.
You know? Yeah. And what's interesting is that I'd like to accumulate wealth and like have a home and a feeling of security and what have you. But every single time that there's some bill that needs to be paid, it gets paid for somehow. I don't know. I can't explain it. I don't actively enforce it and try and make it happen. It just happens. What it says to me is that I'm doing the right thing. Now, when other people get involved in this kind of work, you know, basically we're doing, you know, the higher powers work for them. You know, we're trying to wake up humanity. We're trying to expose scumbaggery. We're trying to do a little bit of nice and good and try and change the way things are by changing ourselves and changing everything around us via our volition and via our action, you know. And when you're getting into it, first of all, that's the first thing that you notice is that you instantly lose everything that you don't really need. And the problem is you felt like you did need them and you get this massive loss. You lose friends, you lose your private property, you lose your sense of happiness and joy in the world. It's actually a really freaking traumatic experience. But the same thing happens, is that just when you think you're about to give up, something will tell you not to give up. Just when you think that you're broke and about to get kicked out, somebody bails you out. And that's what happens when you do the right thing. You spend the bulk of your time suffering, but you always have exactly what you need to get through that suffering. It's quite strange and unique, really.
Exactly, you know, and I personally, I could care less if I ever became a millionaire. And I do have the exact same situation happen on a monthly basis, you know. I could show up to work and not, you know, since I'm a tattoo artist, if nobody's coming through the door, I'm not working. You know, if I don't have any appointments scheduled, and there was a time in the last couple of months where I was like, man, how am I going to make this happen? And I would think about this going, man, I don't know what I'm going to do if I get kicked out of here. I've got no place to go. And right at the last minute, you know, a slew of people comes through the door and saves the day. You know, the same type of situation. And I'm grateful for that, just to be able to do what I do, to be able to do what I love, which affords me the time to pursue other endeavors. And it always just seems to work out. And I know it's because that I'm trying to do the right thing, just as you said.
The Christians believe that there's this tribulation that's going to happen. 7 years of Christians being persecuted, murdered, being forced to do things against their beliefs and what have you. And they seem okay with it. The ones who actually know what the Bible says, and that you get raptured after you get the tribulation. So basically, here's the lesson, ladies and gentlemen. You got to suffer for a hell of a long time before you get any kind of deliverance.
Right. You know, and I would say through, you know, looking into these things that I've really never looked at before, I'd say it's brought me closer to my Creator, so to speak, and has given me a sense of peace. I would like to be able to see humanity through to the point where we're not suffering anymore, but that, you know, realistically may not happen in my lifetime. I would like to, you know, think that helping spark that in humanity is more important than actually seeing it through to the end. I don't necessarily want to see some globalist prison planet either, but, you know, and that comes right back to doing what I can do with the current situation that I'm in. I can only do what I can do at the moment.
Well, I think that's pretty straightforward. And a lot of people have that philosophy. The only thing I can do is what I can do. The problem I have with that is that we don't know what we're capable of until after we do it sometimes. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
A friend of mine, Paul Carruthers, he stood up for this old dude who was like a billionaire in New Zealand, and he got set up by the government, and the government stole all of his massive assets. He was like one of the wealthiest men in the country, and then split it up amongst their mates and stuff like that owned all the receivership companies and ran the banking interests that sold off the assets. And wow. And what was real sad is that Paul was standing up for this guy, and everybody was like mudslinging at him. He got set up by the media. He got set up by the cops and all of this other kind of stuff. He managed to beat them. But he kept going and going and going. And what he realized is that you don't realize what kind of courage it takes to do the right thing until after you've done it.
Right. Right. There's the particular situation I'm in kind of has to do with my being compliant with others' wishes at the moment, and I don't want to do anything to upset that or to hinder my chances of being able to do even more later.
Hey, you know how some people are worried about job security? I'm not, because my job consists on a consistent supply of scumbaggery and the shockingly large quantities of it. Like, right. I mean, honestly, if the world used scumbaggery as an energy source, oh, mate, we wouldn't have to pay for electricity at all.
You got it, man. You figured out 0 point scumbaggery energy, man. That's it.
0 point scumbaggery. So it'll be like the human centipede. You get all the scumbags all sewn together and whatnot in a Mobius reactor, and send a charge through there, and it gets powered by infinite scumbaggery. It'll be fantastic.
Perfect. In a perfect world, right?
Yep. In a perfect world. Now, Here's the other thing that I've been realizing the other, since the other day, bro, is that good people don't get... bad guys don't get assassinated, generally, right? Only good guys get assassinated. Why is that? Well, because the only person who'd want to really assassinate a bad guy would be a good guy. And good guys don't assassinate people.
Right.
Hey, but it doesn't mean that they haven't tried. Here's another thing. There were so many attempts on the life of Adolf Hitler and dictators and scumbags throughout the centuries, right? They always manage to survive somehow. Like, it doesn't matter whether they're being shot at, being having a bomb or poison or anything. They all seem to survive. Like they've got this it's like they've got a dark angel watching over their scumbaggery shoulders that just tells them, you know, there's a brick about to fall off that ledge, bro. Just take a few steps to the left. Step.
Right.
Boom, brick comes down and misses him, you know? And I think Thomas Sheridan even talked about this, is they have the ability to see things before that they happen and in order to get themselves out of dangerous situations, like a psychopathic sixth sense of heightened self-preservation. I don't know, I theorize maybe it's because all of their pathways for fight or flight response, you know, the reptilian brain and what have you, are the only thing that's really active on their brain panel. There's there's very little emotions and empathy, compassion and creativity and things of that nature. So I think maybe, kind of like how a blind man gets all his other senses increases, a psychopath gets all his fight or flight modes and senses very highly attuned in some way.
It almost sounds like a chronic paranoia in a way. Just always expecting the worst, you know, but being able to sense when that's going to happen because of a heightened paranoia in a way.
Yeah. It's actually quite funny in a way because so many conspiracy theorists have that as well.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I'm proud to call myself a conspiracy theorist, you know. I mean, you know, if you're not a conspiracy theorist, you're an idiot, you know. I mean, you know, you got a choice. You know, people always say, oh, there's two types of people in this world, such and such, and they all got, like, different examples of what those two types of people are, you know.
Where do you get the examples from? Some book? Tell them that. For the example?
Well, apparently 97% of statistics are made up. So now what I've got the two types of people is you're either a conspiracy theorist who believes that powerful people who have a lot of influence use their power to maintain or grow their influence, or you're a coincidence theorist who believes that everything happens by sheer coincidence. There's no such thing as deceit, collusion, or secrecy.
I would have to call myself a theorist then.
Yeah. And I think we've got to disarm that term. You know, everybody just calls you a conspiracy theorist. Well, what if we just change the term on them? What if we turn conspiracy theorists into something that's good? You know?
Right. Conspiracy scientist.
You know, everybody's trying to rename it and going, I'm a conspiracy factualist, I'm a conspiracy realist, or whatever. The problem is, whenever you use the term conspiracy, people automatically associate it with the word theorist. So it doesn't matter whether you call yourself a conspiracy X, whatever that X might be, people still see you as a conspiracy theorist, and you're just making up BS. So, therefore, the only solution here is to actually change the definition for conspiracy theorist, something that I think is more apt, rather than to mean crazy person.
Sure, why not?
Did I miss something?
No, you didn't miss anything.
Yeah. I mean, how many...
If you start looking up definitions, I guess you'll find that most conspiracy theorists are considered crazy.
And incidentally correct about 90% of the time. Yeah.
Right. Whoops.
it's like people say, oh, there's crazy conspiracy theories out there. Well, of course there are. We're conspiracy theorists for frack's sake. But that doesn't mean that they're all conspiracies are crazy. I mean, here's how you know that conspiracy's not crazy. It's in law, okay? For example, people could be charged with conspiracy and go to jail for several...
Four people that act concertedly together are considered co-conspirators.
Exactly. So, conspiracy exists in the law. Correct. All right. So, do leprechauns exist in the law? You know, is it illegal to walk your leprechaun on a dog leash, for example? No?
I would have to say, yeah, that's a violation of leprechaun rights, man.
Yeah, okay. But there's no actual law for it. You know why? Because leprechauns don't exist! All right? There's a reason why there's law for conspiracy, because conspiracy exists, and there's not a law for leprechauns because they don't exist. Okay, so if you call somebody a conspiracy theorist and think that makes them crazy, it's like saying somebody's a leprechaun theorist. Okay, now there's arguments out there that leprechauns do exist, you know, and I'm not disparaging the arguments because I haven't looked at them because they sound freaking crazy on the offset. Yeah. See, you know, look, just because we're being ruled by a bunch of ruthless criminals, sociopathic scumbaggery individuals, doesn't mean we can't have a few laughs about it. You know, after all, it's just the end of the world. What are you worried about? You know?
Right.
Think about the immense relief. It's the end of the world in a couple of weeks. No more in-laws.
What are we going to do till the end of the world, man? What is there to do?
I can guarantee you the world's supply of weed will run out in minutes if it was ever announced that it would be the end of the world.
It'd be like a nuclear winter with weed smoke, wouldn't it?
Yeah. They literally beat the planet.
Wow, man.
It'd be like some kind of post-dystopian kind of like marijuana culture or something like that. You know, like in The Time Machine, how there's these carnivorous marijuana plants that pop out of the ground and snatch people and take them into the underground to be carved up and eaten.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Somewhat. Like putting them to, you know, it'd be great to actually make movies. And this is another thing that I think the truth movement should really get into is counter propaganda warfare. All right, here's what I mean. You know how movies connote certain propaganda themes. You know, you'll have like global warming movies like The Day After Tomorrow and whatever. What if there were counter propaganda movies that the conspiracy theory junket was manufacturing and what have you? Not documentaries, but full featured length Hollywood kind of, you know, with the glitz and the glamour and what have you films that were actually talking about real Shiite Muslim. That'd be rough. Right. I reckon that'd be
jailing weird. Bankers, you know, bringing justice into the world, doing away with corruption. Yeah, that'd be great. Would it sell?
I think that there's a big fantasy behind people to have a disaster be the reason they go to see a movie. Somebody's life is in terrible trouble or what have you, or there's an alien invasion, or there's a zombie outbreak, or there's a weather storm, or there's a meteor, or there's something else. You know, whatever. There's infinite ways that the world could possibly be destroyed on film. And I like the idea of inserting dialogue, really powerful, meaningful dialogue. I know there's not a lot of other radio networks out there, Mark, that play clips from films that say things that actually connote a lot of meaning.
Right, right.
The problem is there are a couple of lines out of an entire film that contain meaning. What if they all did? What if the script was so intense, so powerful, so persuasive in its delivery that it actually became a valuable counter-propaganda warfare tool? It became actually quite literally an anti-brainwashing device so that you would teach people about the fact that they're being brainwashed using brainwashing techniques to do it.
Right. I see that, a very viable way of basically counterintelligence, you know, counter brainwashing, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, we're being attacked on a whole bunch of different fronts. You know, they got us socioeconomic hand in the till. There's a racism element, so that people will be all divisive and conquered. You know, you're black, you're white, you're Asian, whatever. And they got a religion element in there. So I'm just thinking about this. How many government departments are there? How many Fortune 500, not Fortune 500 companies, because obviously there's only 500 of them. How many major corporations are owned by the big corporate scumbaggery super elite and whatnot? And then if you wanted to create a society to perhaps change that, you'd have to replace it somehow. Okay, so let's say we go through it industry by industry, replicate how that industry works, invert it so that it does the direct opposite of whatever it's doing now, and then use it as a weapon against them, step by step, the whole way along the thing. That means the Earth would change gradually into a better society over time, rather than having a big boom revolution, so that you'd also be using the enemy's very, very slow creep, or as David Icke calls it, the totalitarian tiptoe.
Right.
But you'd be using it as a pro-libertarian tiptoe.
Right. I see that as an excellent way to go about this. Where would we start, though? You know, who's got the proper funding to get it started?
Well, I think it's already begun. And it's begun in many sectors, okay? And there's levels of participation in those particular sectors. Like, you just take the media, for example. You got people like Alex Jones who have been on mainstream media many times. You know, make what you want of him. He does talk about real stuff, and he's getting mainstream media coverage. This is something that is a great positive sign, of course, many others.
Is it due to infiltration? We've got, you know, the conspiracy theory with Jesse Ventura. You know, he's appeared on that show a few times.
Yeah.
Is it just a basic slow infiltration that's happening, or
slow replacement, like have you ever seen the movie The Thing? They're looking down the microscope and they're trying, and the one guy's just kind of been eaten by the thing and they've burned it. They've taken a sample of its blood and find out that the cells are still alive. And what its cells are doing is they're getting a hold of and eating the guy's cells, his normal healthy human blood cells, these alien ones were, and then, after a small transformation process, they actually become a perfect replicant of the cell.
Right.
Okay. Now, what Alex Jones is doing is he's adopting that practice. So, for example, you've got the nightly news on CNN and CBS. So what he does is he copies and replicates it and turns it into InfoWars nightly news.
Right.
Okay. He has a look at Rush Limbaugh and various other conspiracy talk radio show hosts, Glenn Beck and what have you. He's always listening to his competition. And then he models his radio show and in some cases leads the way on topics of discussions and things of that nature in order to get the biggest and best impact on his audience. He's figured out that there's a lot of times when radio show hosts and what have you will get emotional and or angry on air, and that it boosts their ratings because people are actually very much interested and their ears prick up and their attention gets paid when you have those times in your voice where you're either crying or you're yelling or you're screaming or something of that nature. You see what I'm saying? So he's
right. making it personal.
Okay, now the problem is that brings it open to manipulation, and this is where morality comes in, because if you're going to be replicating something that is evil in order to invert it, you've got to make sure that you invert the evil rather than the evil inverting you, which usually means that you've got to have a hell of a lot of people watching your every move and making sure that you don't turn over to the dark side.
Right. I see where you're going with that.
And I don't know 100% precisely how we're going to go about making this happen, because one man can't regulate himself, kind of thing. He always needs other advisors and close regulators around him, especially if he's going to be accumulating power. Then, of course, if you accumulate power, it's got an inherent corruption value in it, doesn't it? You know, it's...
That goes back to what you're saying about morality. You know, you might want to, I don't know, if there's any way to measure a person's good faith or morality, you know, just based upon what the person says. But, you know, it goes right back to that action thing. And, you know, there's a lot of people that badmouth Alex Jones. You know, I personally kind of side with some of the stuff that he says, you know, and I have trouble with people that find fault with him, because essentially what he's doing is exactly what he claims to be doing, you know, waking people up. And I have to admit that I watched some stuff that he was privy to information that I wasn't, and I was like, really? Okay, so this is what's going on. And, you know, it helped me to open my eyes a lot quicker to what was going on. There are some things that I disagree with. You know, it's just all about that all bankers and all people involved in that are bad people. I don't think that's a situation. I think there are people that are just devoid of any morality, devoid of any virtue, devoid of any couth, basically, that are the ones that are at the top pulling the strings. And it's those people we need to outsmart in a way. Or, you know, we could do this gangster, but we don't really want to resort to doing that.
Well, you can't. I keep saying this over and over again, is that good's defined by what you won't do, you know? No, I'm not going to kill U.S. citizens who are resisting an oppressive government. I'm not going to shoot them, no. I'm not going to take their guns either. You know, that's a good person. That's a good thought. I won't restrain myself from doing that. Sure, I'll kill one. I'll kill two. I'll kill 100. I'll kill the children. I'll kill the women. I'll kill the pregnant women. I'll kill the elderly. Yeah, I'll just drag them out into the street and I'll execute them while they're crying on their knees and watching their children as we're taking them away to put them into our pedophile rings. You know,
See that? That's, I draw the line there, and if it came to defending against that type of thing, well, then that would be the only reason I would resort to any type of a violent response, you know, especially if it involved members of my family. But even if I saw it happening, I can't let it happen right in front of me. So, like I say, even in the position I'm in, even action as far as protesting is kind of off limits for me at the moment. But what I can do is just shovel information and get it out there, get people at least interested in going, well, maybe that does kind of make sense. Maybe we should look into this ourselves, you know, and just like I did, you know, you pick up one rock and you see a million ants scattering and you try to figure out what each one of those ants were. I don't know if that's the right analogy, but
I think
you know what I'm getting at. This whole thing spider webs off into a whole slew of topics, but if you can get one person interested in one...
It's a fractal. You know, it's like a repeating pattern. So the further you zoom into the hologram, actually, the more that same pattern that you saw when you were zoomed out starts to replicate itself, and it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And there's no end to it, right?
Right.
And I think that the universe, our cells, and Scumbaggery are built on that same principle. You know, there's the fractal universe theory, which is you know, atoms that they haven't found the smallest atom yet. They haven't found the biggest galactic star cluster yet, or anything like that. So my theory is it's frickin' infinite either direction. You know, it's infinitely tiny and infinitely massive, and basically we just kind of have to deal with our little sizable place in the universe, really, you know, because we've got consciousness, which is fantastic.
Right, right.
You know, I'm not an amoeba, and I wonder what kind of a society would an amoeba run? Apparently one that's filled with, you know, excrement. Anyway.
Very, very asexual. It'd be kind of boring, but
yeah.
Go ahead.
Fractal Scumbaggery. Okay, so for each instance of Scumbaggery, if you look further into it, suddenly all other masses of Scumbaggery will start to come to light in an infinite fashion. And each and every instance of Scumbaggery that comes to light off of the last instance of Scumbaggery you were looking into, a whole bunch more will fracture out as well. There is an infinite... circles within circles within circles of Scumbaggery enveloping virtually everything I see around me at all given times. You know, it's intensely complicated, and that's why it's difficult to come to, you know, real solid understandings of things. I don't, in fact, I've come to a realization just now, Mark. I don't really know what a lot of things are. I just kind of think that I know what a lot of things aren't.
Right, right.
You know?
I agree with you on that one.
But it's not like stuff isn't knowable. There's plenty of things that are pretty straightforward, you know. For example, if I'm tired, I have a cup of coffee and then I'm not so tired no more.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
That's freaking knowable, okay? So you can't just say, oh, it's just your perception of the coffee that makes it work. No, because the coffee works every single time on every single body, therefore it's an objective truth, okay?
Right, it's backed by science, exactly.
Yeah, okay, so we've got all these levels of verification. Oh, but what if those levels of verification are corrupted? It doesn't matter if it's corrupted, because even if it is corrupted, we still know that it freaking works.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Okay, there might be unforeseen circumstances and what have you within them, like heart palpitations and what have you via my cup of coffee, but Jesus Christ, I'd rather have a heart palpitation in 40 years' time than spend 40 years asleep. Or half asleep.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, but then again, there's a real suicidal nihilism point behind that, isn't there? You know, well, everybody's going to die sometime, so I'll just smoke cigarettes and drink caffeine and alcohol for the rest of my life until I die. But then again, that doesn't even work sometimes.
Kill you, it makes you stronger.
Allegedly. I was talking to one of my listeners who lives in Trinidad and Tobago, and he drinks rum pretty much every day. His mother's the same, and she's like 89 odd or something, and she smokes a pack of cigarettes a day and drinks a bottle of rum with her friends and everything, and she's still going. And I asked her, so when she's around with all her friends drinking and smoking and all of that kind of stuff, are they all laughing and joking and actually having a really, really good time when they're doing it? He's like, yeah, they are. And I go, that's why.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
It's almost like your body doesn't want to die when it's having a real good time.
Right. And
I don't know how that works out for BMX bikers, but never mind.
Well, yeah. Sometimes that can be pretty dangerous and whatnot. But
hey, have you thought about doing conspiracy tattoos, bro?
I do them all the time.
Yeah. Maybe there should be the website, conspiracytattoo.com. You have people like coming in from out of state or whatever, you know, just flying in to have a chat and get a mean tattoo of an enormous Illuminati all-seeing eye pyramid with a gargantuan spear of destiny being stabbed into the central eyeball.
Oh, yeah. Do it all the time.
I did that like yesterday, man.
Did that one a week ago on a federal agent, man. It was crazy.
Word.
I actually do tattoo people that are employed by the government. I can't really go into what organizations or anything, but I do chat with them, and I do give them a piece of my mind, and I try to elicit a response from them, and I'm fairly confident that if shit ever hit the fan, that we'd be in pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm. So you ever done a tattoo of a small girl getting crushed by a boot heel on the shoulder of a police officer sergeant or something like that?
Oh, no, I haven't done the Denver Airport mural as a back piece yet, but I'm sure somebody will come in and ask for it sooner or later.
Yeah. In fact, that would be pretty hilarious, actually, seeing somebody with a Denver Airport mural on their back.
Oh,
a gas mask and stuff. Whoa, that'd be a hell of a lot of work, don't you think?
Yeah, it'd be a little. I know somebody that specializes in that type of stuff. Let me give you his number. There's certain things I probably wouldn't do. I'm attracted to the, I guess you could call it Illuminati symbolism. So I don't mind doing stuff like that, as long as it's not just outright derogatory. As long as it's not straight up gang related. I really wish that somebody would stick a virus in Pinterest and Google Images, because that's pretty much all we get nowadays, are people coming in with, hey, I got something on my phone. Oh, really? What is it? Oh, it's a bunch of words on my rib cage. Oh, really? Cool, man. I'll get right on that. Thanks.
Have you noticed that people are getting dumber, less independent, less creative?
Yeah.
That response sounds like it's been drastic.
Oh, man. You'd be surprised at the total lack of originality of, and it stems from, you know, people doing, not really doing their homework, I guess. Oh, that looks cool on that person. I want that. Can you do that? Well, that's on some I know, but I want that. Okay. And then you can't really say, well, you know what, that's a crappy tattoo. You know, look at the shitty job the guy did. Oh, you want me to do a crappy tattoo on you, too? Oh, great. That's really good for my reputation. That's really going to give our shop a good name, you know? You saw some movie star that had some writing on a ribs and you think that's cool, huh? How are you going to think about that in about, you know, 20, 30, maybe 40 years? Are you sure you want this tattoo? It's that type of thing. And yes, it's a little burned out, so to speak. I wish people would come and go, hey, I want a cool dagger stabbing an eyeball with flames going up the handle of the sword. But I want your artwork. Can you draw this for me? Oh, sure. Cool, man. I could make that look cool. Let me sketch something up for you. How does that look? Oh, awesome, man. Better than I pictured. Let's do this. Can I set an appointment? Yeah, sure. Let's do this. But instead, it's gotten so dependent on electronics, you know, you can't walk down the street without somebody's nose in their phone. Hell, I'm sitting here doing an interview on the internet. I'm victimized by it too, but it's a useful tool. But anyway, in situations like that, tattooing, come on, people, let's give your tattoo artist something cool to tattoo, please.
Maybe you just got to make lemonade out of lemons, and like when they come at you with a tattoo idea or something like that that they got off Google Images, you go, okay, give me a look at this, and I'll sketch something up for you, and just make it part of the service that you actually do your rendition of what it is that they think that they want.
I try my damnedest sometimes.
Really? They actually refuse having it original. They want to be like everybody else.
Right.
Oh. And
that's what's getting burned out. I'm like, why do I even do this? Do I look like a damn typewriter? Come on, people.
I mean, you have 3D printers, people.
Yeah. You know, I had an idea a long time ago to make sort of like an iron lung type thing, and wherever you wanted your tattoo, this mechanism would come and wrap around that part of the body, and this pre-programmed tattoo that you want into the computer before you got into the machine would come zap, and it'd only take a second, and it'd all be beautiful and colorful. But that technology is probably pretty far off in the future right now.
Oh, you never know. Never. Hey, you know, all you're going to do is just think about this. What if it's not necessarily a machine, but it's like a cattle branding, you know? Like a very sophisticated cattle brand, you know, very, very intricately designed and like woven together and what have you. Just, ow.
If we could make lasers that would inject pigment somehow through the light waves into your skin, that'd be awesome.
Mm.
Then you could just, one guy, one tattoo artist, former tattoo artist, could own a shop that you go into. There is no tattoo artist in here. What's up with that? Sit down in this chair. What kind of tattoo you want? Oh, you got one.
I want a barcode on the back of my head like everybody else.
Oh, well, go over to this government office with your ID. They got a special on those this week.
Yeah. It's available in thermal imprint, too.
Yeah.
And biometric. Okay, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Mark Salad. Don't you go anywhere.